She's a singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist who made the move from Washington, D.C. to Dallas back in the early 90s and became known in the then very thriving Deep Ellum music scene. She keeps really busy playing in a few other Dallas bands as well, and the latest solo album, In Case of Somethingness, highlights her heartfelt original lyrics and unique sounding voice. With me in the KETR studios this afternoon from Dallas is Spike. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
I'm going to get this mic a little bit closer to you. It'll get that right up in your face there. Thank you so much for making the trek. I know it's a little bit of a jog from Dallas to get out here, so thanks for doing it for us today.
You're welcome. I'm happy to do it. I actually really like driving, so it was nice to have the excuse to take a little roll out of town.
It's a beautiful time to do it, too. Everything's starting to get green. I want to remind folks, and we're going to talk about this again more before we're done today, but Spike is performing on Saturday in Dallas at the Kessler Theater, opening for former Texas State musician and, in fact, a former student of this university back when it was East Texas State University, Sarah Hickman. That is so cool. Well, we're going to talk about that show a little bit later in the interview here, but there are a lot of listeners right now maybe are trying to visualize how to spell your name. I know that I had it in a different way. I saw it in print, but I was like, hey, how do I say this? So I had to ask you about that via email, but you want to help folks out with how to spell the name?
Sure. It's S as in sandwich, P as in pumpkin pie, Y as in yodel, C as in charlatan, H as in hunchback, E as in elephant.
Wow. This sounds like it was a setup knowing that she was going to do it that way, but that was better than expected. So if you're wanting to look into Spike, that's how you spell it. And that can be confusing for folks. So I just wanted to help you out. Since radio doesn't enable you to see the album cover or anything, how did that moniker come about anyway? Or is that a story we can tell on the radio? I don't know.
Yeah, it's not by any means not an obscene story.
Okay.
I don't even know that there's a story.
Really?
Just everyone always called me that since I was very, very young.
Really?
Then, you know, when the hair metal bands were coming up, you know, because it used to be Spike with an I and like all the hair metal stuff.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to spell mine with a Y and an umlaut. So technically, for a long time, it was a Y and an umlaut.
Okay.
And now it's just regular.
Wow. The evolution of Spike. There you go. Well, that's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people might have assumed that you just came up with that as an artist name, you know. But
nope.
It was a moniker kind of given to you as a kid.
Yes.
Then, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. It stuck. Let me ask you, what kind of early music influences sort of helped shape your music interest, Spike?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. You know, I came up listening to a lot of, you know, at the time was oldies. Now I know oldies is like, you know, the 80s.
Yeah, I know. Guns N' Roses is oldies now,
yeah,
apparently.
It was 50s, doo-wop, soul stuff, Aretha Franklin, that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Listened to a lot of that. Listened to a lot of old country at the time because part of my life I lived in a place where there's two radio stations, one rock station and one country station.
Gotcha.
And I wanted to listen to the rock station, but my parents left it on the country station.
Oh, yeah.
So
yep.
I had a lot of exposure to that. So it's hard to say, you know, where... I think it's hard for anyone to say these are my influences, but you know, when I was little, that's what I listened to a lot.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I think it's always interesting for people to know, you know, how people got turned on to music, because some people find it on their own. Some people grow up in a musically inclined family. Maybe you're just always exposed to it in the car or at home. You know, whether you like it that much as a kid, it definitely shapes you for sure. You know,
yeah.
Like you're saying, you wanted to listen to the rock, but you were having to listen to the country. But obviously you grew to kind of appreciate that based
Absolutely.
On what you've been doing these days.
Yes, yeah.
And that's cool. I always appreciate, you know, eclectic music like that. So that's wonderful. Well, I mentioned it in the intro, but you're not a native Texan, but you cut your teeth with bands in the 80s growing up in D.C., right?
Yep.
That was awesome. I mean, how did you enjoy life up there? I mean, that's got to be slightly different.
Yes, it's very different. It's very different. I laugh about how much culture shock I had moving to Texas from D.C. But, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and the most beautiful thing to me about coming up in D.C. is there was very much this, I hate to even call it a DIY scene, but it was very much like, you know, you do everything yourself. There was nothing available to us. You know,
gotcha.
Everything that we had happen, we made happen. And there was kind of... a very supportive group of people that I kind of grew up playing with. And it was the kind of thing that, you know, I always sang or, you know, started playing bass pretty early in my career as a musician. But, you know, even if we would all be at a house jamming and somebody walks in, we're like, hey, we're jamming, come on. They'd be like, oh, I don't play music. They would get handed something
right.
and they were going to participate. You know, it didn't matter. It could be a plate and a spoon.
Right.
It could be a ukulele. You know, who cares? Like, it, you could not say that you did not play music around these people because you're jamming. We're jamming and
gotcha.
You're here. You're jamming. And that's a beautiful thing. And I wish there was more of that everywhere, because I think the saddest thing to me about music a lot of times in this country is that there's those of us who are musicians and those of us who aren't, and it's a very delineated line, and I don't honestly believe that, you know.
Yeah.
Don't believe the hype. I don't think that's true, you know. I think we all have that inside.
That's an interesting take on that, because yeah, you know, so many artists that I come in, I of course, you know, folks on radio can't see me, of course, so they don't know that I've got long hair and all this. I kind of fit the bill of a musician.
He doesn't. People, he's lying. He's wearing a suit and a bow tie and has a crew cut.
Oh, no. Come on. Don't ruin the image now.
I'm kidding. He's telling you the truth.
Well, I kind of have the look of somebody who might play an instrument, so most artists that come in ask me if I play something. I always explain that all I play really is the CD player. I'm not an artist. I don't play any instruments. I messed around with it when I was a kid and realized it's just not my thing. I don't have necessarily the right muscle reaction for playing a guitar or stringed instrument and the like, but I think that's an interesting.
I don't believe it.
You don't think so?
Nope.
I mean, I can keep a rhythm though, so I could at least I could at least beat on pots and pans or something like that. So, you mentioned playing the bass. How many instruments do you actually play?
Do you want my answer or someone else's answer? I'm kidding. You know, my main instrument is bass.
Okay.
I play badly. I play guitar. I'm a singer. I play drums really badly. And then, you know, I can play a mean pot and pan.
Okay. Hey, well, there we go. You and I have something in common, I guess. Well, you're your own biggest critic, I guess. Huh?
Well, you know.
I'm
just not very good, and that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that I like to say everybody should do this, because it never stopped me. You know, I make records with horrible guitar playing. Why not? Everybody do it.
I have listened to your stuff, and I don't hear horrible guitar playing.
Well,
on there,
thank
so.
You. I think you have to say that.
No, I'm not. I'm not legally obligated to say that. We did not work this out ahead of time. We're talking about your time back in D.C., and I think you were in something that was way more punk rock than your current solo music, right?
Yes.
Press Mob was the band.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it pretty much just straight ahead punk rock?
It really wasn't. You know, Press Mob was kind of a one and only deal at that time, because there was me. I was a teenager and I was singing, and there was three other musicians who had grown up playing basically funk and soul music together since they were, two of them were 12 and the other one was 9. And they used to tell me they didn't want him to jam with them because he was too little.
Okay.
But he was the guitar player, and they're like, he was so good, we had to let him come over. So that particular band wasn't, you know, kind of what we think of as punk rock, a bunch of people that had never played bashing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
These guys were very incredibly skilled musicians, but playing kind of a hybrid of thrash and funk music. It was a strange thing.
Wow.
So that particular band, yeah. But we were very much in the hardcore punk scene. Those are the bands we played with. That was kind of the clubs we played and where we were and who we knew, but
yeah.
We just weren't kind of in that genre.
I gotcha. That's awesome. So anybody that's just joining us, by the way, this is Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR. I'm Matt Minky, hanging out with Spike in studio here today. She's from Dallas. We're going to play some of her tunes here in just a little bit. I was curious, though, Spike, what led you to actually move to Texas?
Well, what led me to move to Texas? Well, I've lived kind of all over the place, and so I've been very used to moving all the time.
Okay.
And I've been in D.C. for a long time, and I think like many people who are in one place for a long time, was like, you know, I was a teenager, I was like, you know, this city's a drag, there's nothing going on here, I hate it here,
sure.
I need to get out. And then, you know, the part that's a little hard to talk about is I was ready to leave, and then a couple of friends of mine got in a very, very bad motorcycle accident, and one of them died, and one of them had irreparable brain damage. This was a guy I was in a band with.
Oh, wow.
I think at the time, or maybe I just left the band. And, you know, I was a kid, I didn't know how to handle emotional stuff, and I was
sure.
Like, that was kind of the fire, like, I wanted to leave anyway, I can't deal with being in this city right now, and I'm leaving. And, you know, I just kind of picked Texas. I'd been here on tour previously and liked it a lot, and was planning on moving to Fort Worth or Dallas, and I ended up being I came down here with a friend who was visiting somebody for Christmas just to get out of town.
Yeah.
And ended up being at a party, running into a drummer in a band that I had played with on tour 2 years prior in Fort Worth. Just random meeting. And he was like, I'm living in Austin. You should come move to Austin and play bass in my band. And I was like, okay, why not?
Right.
And so so I ended up moving to Austin when I first moved here. And just, you know, me and Austin don't get along very well. I just really wasn't enjoying it. And I was driving up here at the time. Sam McCall, who's now the bass player in Brutal Juice, is just a phenomenal guitar player. And he was living in Denton at the time. And I was driving up to Denton pretty much every weekend to just jam with Sam. We would just like lay around and play.
Okay.
He'd play guitar and I'd play bass like all night. And I would do that every weekend. And I ended up meeting people here that I preferred playing with and ended up moving to Dallas.
Wow, that's cool. Well, we're certainly glad that you did. Not that there's anything wrong with Austin. We're glad you got to Texas, period. But I'm kind of glad you chose Dallas because, I mean, Austin is awesome. But, I mean, they're just – it's almost oversaturated, I think, with artists, you know. I think I talked to some artists that are from Austin that are talking about how they're sort of struggling because there's just so many other artists out there. It's like actors in L.A. or something, you know. Just too many people vying for attention. And I think you're a great addition to the Dallas music scene, and it's been like 20 years now. Do you feel like an official Texan now?
Yeah, I kind of do, actually, because I haven't lived here the whole time. I moved away for a long period of time and missed Texas more than I have missed anywhere in the world.
Really?
And my goal was like, I just need to get back. I just need to move back to Dallas. That's
nice.
The plan, and that's what I did. And so I moved back in 05, and I'm just so happy to be back. You know, it's just, it really does feel like home to me now.
That's great. Well, we definitely, we welcome you with open arms, and we're glad to have you here in Texas, and I'm glad that you feel at home in the Lone Star State, as well you should. I talk to a lot of transplants, you know. People get here as quick as they can, and it kind of gets its hooks in you, you know. I mean, it is, it's an interesting dichotomy, I think, for musicians and tattooed folk like yourself, that we're kind of living in this crazy conservative part of the world, but you know, it's so great to have an outlet of awesome artists like yourself. So good for you for keeping up the good fight.
Thank you. And listeners, he's lying. I don't have tattoos. I'm wearing a business gown and I have a beehive and very nice makeup.
There you go. It's always fun to paint these pictures for radio listeners that are apparently completely untrue about the way we look. We're talking to
Why
Spike.
Not?
I know, absolutely.
We can. Why not do it?
It's very true. Spike is my guest in studio this afternoon on 88.9 KETR. So how long, or rather, how did you start working with this guy, John Dufalo, by the way? He was originally from Death Ray Davies. Death Row Davies, totally different band. Death Ray Davies he was originally in. But how did you end up hooking up with John originally?
You know, originally in the early 90s, John was living in San Antonio, and our bands used to play together.
Okay.
I was in a band called Rumble, he was in a band called 13, and we did a lot of shows together. But what's interesting is, you know, as things can go when, you know, you're just playing shows in different cities, we didn't remember each other from those bands.
Okay.
And I ended up meeting him at a cafe. He was working at a cafe that I used to hang out with, and I'm like, you look really familiar. I'm like, are you from New York? For some reason, I thought he was from New York. And he was like, no, but we just started talking, and then ended up, as we talked, realizing that we'd done a ton of shows together in the early 90s. And then I think, I'm not even sure how we started. I think we probably just started playing songs together because we did that for a long time, just sitting on each other's porches, singing songs, and hey, you know, kind of woodshedding songs and stuff like that. And I ended up doing a lot of recording with him on his stuff. So there's a lot of kind of cameo appearances of me doing vocals on a lot of John's records. Most recently, I did a song of his on his John Singer Sargent record, which is a cover. It's actually the only one that he didn't play the music on, because I always did it. Like, I love playing covers of my contemporaries because they're beautiful songs. Why not?
Yeah.
And so he recorded me doing that for that record. And so this was the first time that we had actually recorded together on my stuff. So that was very exciting for me. I'm so happy that we got the chance to do that.
Without a doubt. And you were referring to this John Singer Sargent album from a couple of years ago. You did this tune with Tony Miller and the amazing Sarah Jaffe. Did you actually get to work directly with them, or was that one of those things?
No, that was all just separately
tracked
in the studio.
Yeah,
so yeah, it was me and John. And actually, that song, I mean, you can barely even hear. There's a little bit of my vocals on there, but I thought they were actually taken out. But he says they're still on there, so I kind of don't count that one.
Really?
Yeah. But that's definitely the one that gets attention because it has, you know, these kind of bigger artists on it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, why don't we let listeners decide whether they can hear you, because it's a short but sweet tune. It's only clocks in at about 2.5 minutes, but I wanted to spin that tune Gone in a Second.
Cool. And it'll give a beautiful song.
It is. It's great. And this is from this compilation called John Singer Sargent. And can you briefly explain what this album is to folks?
Yes.
I mean, because it's kind of a hard concept to get your brain around.
This is such a beautiful record, and I really encourage people to check it out. John Dufalo, you know, he's known as kind of a frontman and a guitar player in a number of bands. He's an amazing drummer. He was drumming for Apples in Stereo, and he wanted to. He doesn't consider himself a great singer. I disagree, but his thing was, I want to write a bunch of songs and just bring a bunch of friends of mine in to sing them. I don't want to sing on any of them. So all the songs were written by John. You know, he recorded everything. He really arranged everything, but he just pulled in people that he wanted to sing on the record. And so every song pretty much has a different singer. I think there's a couple that people appear on a couple times, but it's very much him, although he's not singing on any of it.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting concept that you don't see a lot of artists doing, saying, hey, I take my songs and you do your version of them. It's really neat.
And she would say something honest like, this life is gone in a second. I'd be gone in a second. Tell me a joke instead. I don't feel like getting heavy. Not today.
That's from the 2012 record, John Singer Sargent. That was Tony Miller, Sarah Jaffe, and today's in-studio guest, Spike, on the tune Gone in a Second. I wanted to talk about some of the many bands that you've currently got your talented hands in. We are really moving towards your solo album here. I know we're talking about everything but that so far, but I wanted to at least get a chance to mention some of these bands. And I remember growing up as a punk rock loving teenager with the synonymous yellow Bad Music for Bad People poster of the band The Cramps up in my room. But if you grew up listening to like punk rock music, this is a band that people know of.
If you've never heard of The Cramps, you have to check out The Cramps. I mean, they're kind of like, you know, everybody has to. You don't have to like them, but you do have to hear them. Everyone go do your homework.
May not necessarily be for everyone in the family. While we're making this recommendation, I don't know if you want to listen to this at dinner necessarily. But anyway, where I'm going with this is, of course, as you know, you play for a popular Cramps tribute group called Gorehounds in Dallas, right?
Yes.
That kind of gives you a much different outfit than than some of the other stuff that you're doing here, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It has its own... its own type of costume.
I would say, yeah. I mean, how did this come about anyway, and how long have you been doing that?
I have been playing with the Gorehounds for 3 years.
Wow.
Shockingly. They've been around for 4, and I'd say that they tricked me into it because, you know, as a snobby DC musician, you know, there's no way that I'm ever going to be in a cover band or a tribute band because that's just lame.
Yeah.
And so... they, at the time, a very dear friend of mine was their bass player, and he had to miss a couple of shows. He was going out of town, I think, touring with his jazz thing. What is the name of his? His name is Greg Prickett, and he is in a band called Unconscious Collective, who are just amazing free jazz stuff. So I think he was out on tour with them, and they asked me if I could cover a couple gigs. They asked me if I could do a Dallas-Austin run, and I was like, you know, I know them all. They've all been friends of mine. So I was like, sure, you know, a couple gigs, who cares? Sounds like fun. We dress up silly and play Cramps songs. I love the Cramps, same as you. Like, you know, I grew up in the punk scene, grew up with the Cramps. And so I did a couple shows, and it's as fun as it looks, you know, as fun as those pictures look or the videos look or the shows look. It is really that fun to do. And so, you know, I could still be, you know, haughty and think I wasn't in a tribute band because I was just covering a couple shows. Well, 6 months later, they called and asked if I would be their bass player.
Really?
They were parting ways with Greg, and I was like, oh, no. I was like, you know, I have two choices. I can eat crow and admit this and do something super fun and just, you know, stop being so snobby, or I can turn it down because I'm a snob, and like, I just had to do it. And so it's still super fun. And, you know, our crowd is very supportive. They're super, super fun. They're always dancing and sometimes dressing up into it. And that's just a beautiful thing to kind of have that dialogue with the audience as well.
if somebody out there has been saying to themselves, man, there's just not enough cover groups that that do the Cramps music, well, look no further than Dallas's Gorehounds. I think you guys and gals play pretty regularly, don't you?
We play about every 3 months or so.
There you go. Well, that's awesome. So keep your eyes open and ears open for Gorehounds if that's your kind of thing. Or maybe you might prefer yet another outlet of my guest, Spike. You're also a member of a more kind of Americana-focused, that's how I'm describing it anyway, mm-hmm. group called Hell Texas. It actually sounds like the names ought to be reversed. Hell Texas sounds like way more hardcore than the sound of the group itself. But tell me about Hell Texas.
Hell Texas. Well, I think of it as being like a town in Texas, kind of encompassing the whole state. Hell Texas was formed by Taz Bentley, who's originally a drummer. He was a drummer for a long time in the Reverend Horton Heat. He's been playing with some of the guys, ex Guns N' Roses guys. I think he plays a lot with Izzy Stradlin still, does a lot of recording with him and Duff McKagan. So Taz, as we know, is a drummer, and I ran into him at the bank one day, and he was like, I want to sing and play guitar, and I'm starting to do these shows, and I'm really terrified, and you should come support me. And I was like, okay. So I started out going to see him. He was just doing solo acoustic shows, and he was amazing. He's an amazing songwriter, amazing singer, great guitar player, and like he's like many, very self-conscious. He's like, you know, oh, I'm a drummer. He's always saying, I'm a drummer. That's why this sounds like that. I'm like, Dad, you sound great. And so then he started playing with Cricket Taylor, who's an amazing singer, who's also on my record.
Yes.
So Cricket and Kenny Withrow, he got them to kind of fill out his sound a little bit. So those three were doing shows together. And then he decided he wanted to go full band, and he asked me to play bass with him. And so I'd already been going as a fan and loving his songs and loving hearing him. So yeah. I was, of course, right on board when he asked me to do it. And it's beautiful stuff. And, you know, Kenny Withrow is, you know, I don't know if you know him. He was in the New Bohemians. He's been playing in the Grateful Dead tribute band lately called, what is their name? Forgotten Space.
Okay.
He's been playing with them and just does things all over the place. Just amazing player. And then as our drummer, we have the drummer that's playing in my solo band, Aaron Lyons.
Yeah.
So it's the four of us, and it is kind of an Americana thing, but we often venture into some just heavier, different time signatures, kind of craziness that stuff hasn't been recorded yet. So it's a little bit of a shame because our first album is about to come out, and the kind of more experimental stuff is not on there, but I think we're kind of moving in that direction too.
Cool. Well, I definitely got to get my hands on that album when it comes out. I would love to have records by all these groups that you're involved in. You're going to have to put a stop to this at some point. You're going to have to say, no, I cannot be a member of another band. I'm stretched too thin here.
I know.
Well, so if you're keeping track, my guest Spike is in Gorehounds and Hell Texas and who knows what other bands she might be a part of. Those are the only ones we're going to talk about right now anyway. But if you're just joining us, this is 88.9 KETR. It's Notably Texan on your speakers here today. Spike, in late 2014, you released your second solo album with a great title. I love the album title, In Case of Somethingness. That's a very kind of cool play on words, and always gives a spell check a fit, you know, whenever you start typing it in. But anyway, you reunited with your old buddy that we were already talking about, John Dufalo, who helped out on this record, right? Mm-hmm. As a producer and as an instrumentalist,
yes.
I believe.
Yeah.
So he's all over this album.
Yeah. Man. And to me, that's what makes the album awesome because, you know, for me, I'm bored listening to my own music. You know, I often play solo. It's me and my guitar. Why on earth would I record that? You know, I can hear it in my living room. And I actually, Robert Wolanski years ago got very angry at me for saying that because he's like, so the rest of us can hear it.
That's true.
Oh, wow. What do you guys matter? I can hear it whenever I want. But so my first record was just me and guitar. It's all guitar. It's all me. Nobody had any input, you know, from any standpoint. And, you know, it's kind of a boring way to work, to be honest with you. And for the second record, I thought it would be fun to have somebody come in and produce it and have someone else's kind of artistic energy in there.
Definitely.
And, you know, John and I had spent so much time in the studio together. We're very good friends. We always have just a super good time. And so I asked him if he would do it, and he said, yeah. So it's, to me, what makes this record so interesting is because it's kind of a John record. You know, I get to really hear him, and hear his influence. So I think that was just a great experience to do it and to listen to it as well.
Well, I think the outcome is really great. I'm curious, how do you categorize the sound on this album? Because to me, it's kind of hard to do, and I know you. It might be hard to do, but it always is for an artist.
I think it's always hardest for us to categorize our own music, certainly. You know, there's a couple tunes on there that are absolutely straight ahead, kind of old country.
Yes.
But the other stuff, I don't really know what to call it either. You know, when people ask me, I'm like, well, it's kind of mellow, like singer-songwriter stuff. You know, when that's pretty much meaningless, but it gets them to stop asking me the question.
Right. I understand. I'm not a big fan of the whole categorizing music. I just believe good music is good music, but people like to know, you know, get an idea of what they're getting into before they hear it.
And I mean, I do too. You know, I'm like, for me, I always want to know where somebody's from. Where's that person from? Because even that gives me kind of a frame of reference. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking that question. I think it's just a tough one to answer. And so I will often ask people like, well, you've seen me, you tell me, or go listen to my record and you tell me. And then I'll like have some like, well, someone so said it was.
That's really seems to be kind of a staple of most of the Texas music that I deal with, is that it's sort of unclassifiable, you know, and maybe that's because that's what I seek out, or things that I sort of notice when they come into the station. You know, I mean, the cookie cutter kind of Nashville country stuff is a dime a dozen. You know, we get plenty of that all the time, but it's releases like yours that kind of stick out. And I really appreciate getting this stuff in. I want to give folks an example of what we're talking about here. I wanted to play the cut Only Heart Broke. Any insights that you can share with me on this song?
I wanted to write a duet for two women, and that was really my intention. And it's a little different because I don't typically write with an intent beforehand, but this particular song I did, and I was like, I want to write a duet for two women. Let's see what comes out. And that's how it came out. And so a lot of times when I do it live, I just sing the whole thing. So it's completely nonsensical if you actually listen to the words, which luckily nobody does. But, you know, I was so honored that Cricket came in and recorded it with me, because she is just phenomenal. People, if you don't know who Cricket Taylor is, you must, again, look up the Cramps, look up Cricket Taylor. Her band, The Electromagnetics, is actually with the guitar player from Hell, Texas, Kenny Withrow, and her.
Okay.
And a guy named Gerard Bendix, a drummer. But they're just phenomenal. She's an amazing singer, amazing guitar player, great writer. And so it was just, again, a treat to work with her.
And you're featured on a lot of the instruments on this cut, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so.
According to the CD, anyway.
Well, whatever it says on the CD is true. I think I might have actually played everything on this one.
That's what I believe that I saw on there. So that's kind of a cool thing to me. I always find that interesting.
Cool.
Obviously, we're talking about a multi-tracking thing here where you go in and record each of these
parts.
That
would be awesome if I didn't, though. Oh. If I had like the one-man band deal with the drum set and the bass and the guitar.
Then you'd have something going.
That's something to work for.
Oh, Spike.
I'm not trying to keep something that never was really mine. I'm not trying to hold on too tight and make everything unwind. But every night I pray, every night I pray, let the only heart broke be mine.
That tune really is beautiful. You pointed out Cricket Taylor doing the duet with you on that, and your voices really just kind of set each other's off, I think. Great job on that tune.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about listener-supported radio for a little bit. That's something near and dear to us here at KETR. Spike, I'd kind of love to hear your words and thoughts about the positive impact that a public station can have on the community it serves. You have lived in multiple communities, most recently over in Dallas, who have their own public radio over there. But you know, why is public radio a good thing for areas that have it?
Why is public radio a good thing? Well, from my standpoint, what I appreciate the most about public radio is I think that there's not a need to sensationalize things quite as much to sell advertising. You know, fear sells advertising, panic sells advertising, and I think a lot of commercial media kind of preys on that. We have to scare you. We have to make sure that you know about this disaster or this horrible thing. And I think public radio, because they're not dependent on advertisers, they can approach things from a little bit more middle of the road, calm way to look at maybe both sides of an issue and not have to sensationalize. And I think for me, that's one of the things that I love about it, even, you know, more from kind of a news standpoint personally.
Yeah. Yeah, and we definitely have a lot of programming from NPR here on the station, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, that sort of a thing. And these are programs that do just that. You know, I mean, they look at all sides of an issue, not just one side or the other. And you don't have pundits yelling at each other, which is, you know, kind of the mainstay of any other news that you go to these days. As an indie artist yourself, you probably know firsthand how vital a non-commercial station can be to somebody who's trying to kind of spread the word about their art, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, both of my solo records are, you know, I have, you know, quote, a record label, you know, which is basically I don't put out anything but my records. And, you know, if you don't have a lot of money behind you, which a label, even if it's an independent local label, they have more money than I do to kind of, you know, put their artists in places to be seen and put their artists on stations or make sure, you know, Joe Schmo corporate dude, you know, is willing to play their record. And without public radio, artists like me would never have any radio exposure, period, ever. So, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And you know, just the fact that you, Matt, could go, hey, send me your record. I want you to come do an interview, like, because you wanted to.
Right.
You know, you're not enslaved to, like, Joe Corporate, who says, no, Matt, I don't care what you like or who you want to have on the station. You're not doing it. So that freedom for the DJ and for the people that work at the station and the artist is very, very powerful.
And, you know, really, the thing that I think is hard for listeners to kind of wrap their brain around sometimes is the main reason that we have this freedom is because of listener support, because we're a non-commercial station. Trust us, it would be way, way easier to sell advertising to fund this radio station. That's how all the other stations out here in this area do it. That's how the bulk of the stations in Dallas do it that are owned by, you know, a couple of corporations these days. That's kind of come, you know, one or two conglomerates that own all the stations in Dallas lately. And anyway, they fund themselves through selling advertising and enticements to buy and all that sort of a thing. And we don't have those commercial directions over us here. We are funded by the listeners that utilize this service. And that's what enables us to spend an entire hour talking to Spike. We're all about artists. We're all about music here on this program. And the only reason that we're able to do that is because listeners just like you out there have taken their time and dollars and gotten behind what we do at the station. And you know, it doesn't take somebody breaking the bank to support it either, right? You know, it's just...
Right, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I actually wanted to go on a tirade about that, if you don't mind.
I do not mind at all.
Because here's the thing. I think we're told a lot as individuals that we are powerless. We can't do anything unless we are the millionaire 5 miles down the road. If we're not that guy, we don't have any influence. And it's just not true. You know, if 10,000 people donated one freaking dollar to this station, that's a lot of money that you guys could do. I don't know how much, you know, radio costs, but $10,000, you know, when, if we think about, can I myself donate $10,000 to something that I appreciate, right? I can't do it. But I feel like with a lot of people, that stops them from giving the $1 that they can, or the $5 that they can, or the 10, 20, 50, 100, 500, 1,000, whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. If you appreciate it, give a little back. Just give a little back because it's going to help it keep going. So that's my tirade. Thank you.
No, thank you. And you know, a gift to KETR is in a way a gift to artists like my guest Spike because it keeps this avenue open. It's not an easy thing to find in radio, period, these days. So please consider supporting what we do here at KETR. We're celebrating our 40th year of serving Northeast Texas, all thanks to listener support. And remember that you can keep us going strong by going to KETR.org and clicking donate at the top of the site. And like my guest Spike said, doesn't take a $10,000 gift from you alone, but if 10,000 people gave a dollar, we'd be a lot closer to our goal. So please do that today, KETR.org. I wanted to spend one more cut off of In Case of Somethingness, and this tune features a former bandmate of yours who recently passed away, Johnny McNabb. This is that tune, Drinking and Driving, and I certainly don't want to bring you down, obviously, on this, but this tune really has kind of that old school country flavor that you mentioned earlier. Obviously, I don't want to get into any emotional territory about this friend of yours that you lost.
You know, it is hard to talk about, and I appreciate you saying that, but it was such a gift to get to do this with Johnny because it had been, you know, we were bandmates in the early 90s, and to reconnect with him, not only as my friend, but to reconnect with him as a musician and to record together. I'm really grateful we got to do that.
I'm drinking and driving. You are waiting. I'm tired of trying. stay. I'll let you go your own way. Forget about this bond. And I'll keep both hands on the bottle so I don't have any hands left to hang on.
My name is Matt Minky. In studio with Spike, you have got a gig coming up this weekend that we want to be sure to talk about here with the great Sarah Hickman, a former Texas State musician. Tell me about Saturday's show, if you would.
Oh, Saturday, we are playing at the Kessler Theater in Oak Cliff, which is just a beautiful, beautiful listening room.
Yeah.
You know, it's really the only, in my opinion, the only place where people really go to listen to music
right.
in Dallas. And it's so amazing. And I just want to quickly say that when they were renovating that building, Jeff Lowes, who's a local music, you know, local musician and local music kind of guy,
yeah.
aficionado, booking agent, many roles in the town. He did a video series called Resurrecting the Kessler, in which he got tons of local musicians in to play in the building as they were renovating it. So there's me, there's videos on YouTube of me playing in there, you know, on a dirt floor when it was like that. And, you know, Cricket Taylor has a video, Reggie Roofer, who played violin on my record, there's some of him. And those are actually a couple of my favorites. So, you know, you can Google that series and just see many people doing that. So that, for me, is why I'm particularly excited about doing the Kessler, just because of that connection I feel to the building.
That's cool.
And then I'm also super excited about playing with Sarah Hickman, because, you know, I can't say that I know her, but I'm acquainted with her from, you know, early Deep Ellum days, Club Data, that kind of scene. So I'm super looking forward to that.
Well, you two are a couple of dynamite gals, if I do say so myself. So that should be an amazing show. The two of you kind of, you know, sharing that stage, that's going to be amazing. Folks can probably find out more about this. Where can they keep up with you online, by the way?
Online, I have my website, which is spyche.com. You know, I spelled it with the words to help you earlier.
Yes.
I'm also on Facebook, which is Facebook.com/SpikesMusic.com,
okay.
I believe. So the website is probably the best way, but you can also, you know, like my band page on Facebook.
Absolutely. And that show is this Saturday with Sarah Hickman. And your is this going to be with your Mega Rock Stars, Rock All Stars group or not?
Actually, Spike and half of the Mega
half,
Rock All Stars.
Okay.
It's going to be a little bit stripped down.
And like I said, we're running short on time, but I did want to give you an opportunity to do a tune. Which song did you want to do for us here?
I want to do a song called Start.
Folks, I want to thank Spike once again for coming in, and I want to give you an opportunity to let us hear this tune Start as we draw near the end of the interview. It's kind of a cool way to do this here.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, thank you for coming in. Here is a live performance by Spike on 88.9
KETR. I want something to tell me what to do. I want something to show me the way. You won't get anywhere bad if you don't go anywhere at all. So start, start. Start here. Write a bad song.
Spike, I cannot thank you enough. That was beautiful. Thanks a lot for doing that. And I'd love to have you back out again. Let's not make this the last time you come out to Commerce to talk to us, okay?
Well, I'll be here tomorrow.
Oh. Okay. All right, we'll see if we can make room for you. Spike, have a safe trip back to Dallas. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you for having me.